Okay. Good morning. So as usual, I start a bit early. Rely on the expert. Okay, so any questions from yes? According to the tradition, like Tibetan Buddhist tradition, usually they recommend half open your eyes, like. But I usually recommend people to just close the eyes, because sometimes people put so much effort in trying to maintain the eyes half open, it becomes like a distraction from them. And anyway, if you're like me, if I really get into my meditation, I forgot about my eyes, so they close anyway. So, but I think you can experiment, see which one suits you better. Yeah. More difficult to visualize. Then you just close it. Or some people actually do it with their eyes completely open, and not staring at anything, but so then you just direct your gaze. Here in this room like this, I usually recommend people just gaze at the floor in front, not too near, a bit further. But if you are out, you're at home, or you are at a place where there's a view, like you can look out, then it's better to just look straight ahead and look at that, especially if somewhere where you can meditate, where you can see a lot of space, then you can leave your eyes open also. Yeah. Actually, for visualization, it's good to learn to visualize with your eyes open, because what happens is that you learn to. It's a bit like daydreaming like that. You learn this skill whereby, regardless of what you are actually looking at. No, your mind is able to create all these different visual images. Yeah. Okay. Actually, with the eyes open are better, because the light and the sense of space actually helps with the visualization. Okay. But I mean, you can do whichever one works for you. Yeah. Oh, yes. So the question is, you start off with the meditation object as the breath, and then later your focus shift to the heartbeat. You become aware of the heartbeat. Yeah. Actually, there's no hard and fast rule, but usually you don't focus on your heartbeat. Okay. You might become aware of it during your meditation. Okay, oh, I can really feel my heartbeat. But heartbeat is best not never to make it as an object of focus, because you don't want to interfere with the rhythm of your heart. Can be a bit dangerous. But if during your meditation you are aware of other things like the beating of the heart or some other sensations, that is quite normal, right? So in this case, I suggest sticking with the breath. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, as usual, you experiment and you find, like, as far as eyes are concerned, which works best for you, whether open fully, half open, or closed completely, and then you just adopt that. Yeah. You can also open fully. The reason why I don't recommend it here is when you leave your eyes open fully and you're in a room full of people, our visual sense are very powerful, and we are very sensitive to movement. So you leave your eyes open, like me, if I meditate with my eyes open, anyone move in the group, my attention will go there. See? So it becomes very distracting. Whereas if I'm in Tibet, up in the Himalayas and sitting in my cave and I look out at the blue sky, then it doesn't really matter, right? Then it's actually better to have the eyes open in that setting. But in a kind of closed setting like this, that's why if people want to lift their eyes open, it's fine. But I suggest they direct the gaze at some neutral surface like the floor that's not going to, hopefully not going to move. Right? Then that reduce the distraction to the mind. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we are still on visualization. Is there any other question? Those of you who attended the past sessions. Okay, if not, let's get on with today's class. And so last week, I introduced a meditation, sometimes we call it body of light meditation, where we imagine slowly transforming our body, you know, which we tend to view as something solid, full of, you know, cells, bones, muscles, tissues, and so on. We transform it into a body that is completely filled with something, radiance, brightness, with light, and other positive experiences. So, and I introduced this idea that sometimes in visualization, what we try to do is we try to work with positive images that we have very positive association. And usually when we use the word image, then we are referring to visual images. So work with the idea of light, brightness, radiance, which tends to have a very kind of a positive connotation. It sort of brighten up your life. It have an uplifting quality or even an energizing quality to it. So we work with positive images like light. For example, we visualize golden yellow lights. So colors also come in. Colors are different association for different people. But quite often in a meditation like that, we use golden yellow. Because golden yellow has a... like gold, you know, gold is like something wealthy associated with wealth. Of course, that is by convention, the convention of our society, of our, you know, but that's what we grew up with, this kind of association, cultural or whatever. So, visualizing golden yellow has this sense of wealth or richness, which is what we want. And also, we can associate with like a feel of, not in Singapore, of course, like a field of harvest of wheat, you know, golden wheat. You know. So there's this sense of harvest, like something abundance, bountiful. Right? So these are very positive connotations that we bring that into the visualization. So positive images. In other contexts, you may visualize other type of images. For example, in meditation, they're very Buddhistic, especially in Tibetan Buddhism. Then we visualize, you know, anyway, this room is full of all these images. You can visualize them. Yeah. So any one of them have a kind of sacred connotation. Like for example, this huge big tanka is actually the merit field for a practice called offering to the spiritual master or guru puja. Although sometimes people call it guru tree because it's just a lot of gurus sitting on a tree. It's actually a Actually, what happens is you visualize a lake. I think it's filled with milk. Yeah, out of it grow this tree, which is there's nothing real about it because it's like made of the trunk is gold or silver or whatever, and then the leaves are from emerald, and the fruits are some kind of crystals or whatever. And on top of it, there's a big platform, and all these gurus sit there, right? A big whole. That's why people call it guru tree. Although when I first learned about it, my teacher specifically said, it is not respectful to call it a guru tree. Gurus in the tree. Yeah. So it's a field of merit. And this is something you visualize. Yeah. And I remember a story. One student complained to one of our teachers. Said, how could I possibly remember so many people? Each one of them have a name, actually. They are like a specific. There's an identification. Yeah. No, I can't possibly do it. And this is Geshe Lama Kongchok, this teacher. Very stern, very strict teacher. He says, well, if you remember one each day, and in 1 year you will have remembered 365 names, and there isn't 365 figures in this picture. So what can you say, you know? So basically he said, don't be lazy. No, if you really want to do it, you can do it. And this is a very positive image because all those figures are associated with, in the context of Buddhism, with enlightenment, with progress along the path, or they, in one way or another, they support us in our practice along the path. So this is positive images, first thing. Second, we also try to invoke positive thoughts or positive words. Yeah. Thoughts is like, no, I mean, this day is positive thinking. You don't need me to tell you about that, right? After all, I'm a pessimist. Never ask a pessimist about positive thinking. Yeah. But so we try to invoke or think in a positive way, in an encouraging way, in an empowering way. No, don't think to yourself, oh, for sure I will fail in this visualization. I have never succeeded. So this time I also fail. So those are very so-called negative thoughts, depressing thoughts, right? Should think in a positive way. Say, last time the Buddha looks like a lump. Right? This time at least there's a bit of a silhouette. There's a few, looks like arms and legs. So there is improvement. Still look like a lump. But anyway, so you think positively. Okay, and sometimes you can also invoke positive words, even a single word. Words that have special connotation. For example, my magic word. You know what is my magic word? Took me many years. Release. Not relax. Release. See? It has positive connotation in my mind. I might be meditating and I got caught up thinking about this and that, and suddenly, out of nowhere, I hear myself say, release. That's right. That's what I'll do. I breathe out and I drop the whole damn thing and release it, okay? So words sometimes can have very positive connotation, and because of your association with it, just a single word sometimes can bring up really positive experiences for you, okay? And then you, in this category, you can also include mantras, right? Mantras that, especially mantras that you have become very familiar with. Just many years you have been reciting it. It doesn't really matter whether you understand what the mantra is talking about. The actual literal meaning is less important. More important is your association with the mantra. What do you associate the mantra with? You associate with safety. You associate with refuge. You associate with protection. Some positive association. For example, I have very strong association with this mantra of Tara. Is there a picture of Tara? That at the back, the green Tara, yeah. Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Soha. So at times of danger, personal, physical danger, quite often this mantra will pop into my mind. Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Soha. In fact, the only one time, touch wood, that I got lost in the New Zealand bush. I was really, really lost in the New Zealand bush. And I was panicking because the sun looks like it's going to set. I'm going to spend my night in the New Zealand, although it's called bush, right? And then being Singaporean, when I first heard the bush, bush in Singapore is like a scrub, right? Just a few here and there, right? The New Zealand bush is not a bush. It's a jungle, okay? With tree ferns high up. And when I walk up to a higher place to try to locate where I am, all around me is completely green, for kilometers and kilometers, right? Say, oh, I'm very lost. Okay? So I panicked, and I actually tripped myself over along the trails, which is a dangerous thing to do when you're lost, because if you would break something, you can actually die. You can die in the New Zealand bush, you can die in the Australian bush, yeah. But nobody know I'm there. No, I was there, yeah. So anyway, so as I was panicking, this mantra came to mind. And it calms me down, because it's just sort of reside in my head. On and on and on. After a while, I calm down and I think more clearly. I say, okay, I need to try to backtrack. Yeah. Try to find my way back to where I start from, which I clearly succeeded, otherwise I wouldn't be here. Yeah. All right. So there's positive words and positive thoughts, okay? Yeah. The third one is positive feelings. Yeah, feelings, feeling of being loved or being loved, feeling of compassion, feeling of joy. So you can also bring feelings into your visualization practice. So although we call it visualization, it doesn't just mean a visual image like right? No, like this day you see on a computer screen or your mobile phone screen. No, you actually need to invest a lot more in those images that you bring to mind, so that they have not only they have a very positive connotation, but they're associated with positive thoughts, they're associated with positive feelings. Okay, and the last one is the quality of trust. Right. So here you are visualizing and imagining all these different things. You need to, at least on a certain level, trust in the process or believe that it has certain effectiveness or a certain impact or effect on you. Right. If you sit there and then, oh, anyway, you know, it's just like children playing, you know, tea party like that, you know, it's all pretending and nothing real is going to happen, no. Here I am visualizing the Buddha, fly here, fly there, dissolve here, dissolve there. No, but it's all make-believe. Then you are undermining the practice, the power of the visualization practice. Okay, you need to up to a certain extent, entrust yourself to this process. You think that this process of this meditation on visualization has some power, some effect to invoke or bring forth something healing or something empowering, some positive effect on yourself or on your body and mind. Okay, and this trust, of course, you can't expect yourself to have a trust or confidence in it right at the beginning. Right, it starts off maybe a little bit, like maybe just a willingness to give it a try and see what happens. But each time you try to increase it, you know, each time you try to notice any positive response that come out of it, that the response sort of affirm to you that, hey, maybe something good is happening. You know? And as you repeat the practice, keep coming back to it, then that sense of confidence or trust in the efficacy of the practice increases. You know? So much so that eventually you are quite able or willing to just immerse yourself in it, just give yourself to it, just go along with the practice and see what happens. You know? Yeah, so that makes a big difference in how effective your practice is, okay? So you must, if you're going to try it, don't try it with this idea that, oh, it's not going to work, it's all make-believe, you know, it's just, I'm just playing around with my mind. Okay, if you want, just go along with it and at least be open to, be receptive to just give it a try and see what happens, okay? Right, because if your mind is closed, then it's very unlikely that this kind of practice would have any positive effect. It becomes like a waste of time. Right? Okay, so this is what I covered previous week. And we're going to repeat the meditation, the Body of Light meditation. So in case you're new, just to describe what we are doing. So if you're like, some people are fantastic at visualization practice. They visualize on demand. You know, they can select colors, select images, then along the way they have more options like pop up, like dum, 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 like, you know, like suggestion, notification. No, you can also visualize this. There are lots of options. You know? Wonderful. I'm not those people. Okay, so usually I visualize and nothing appears. I try and then, you know, like I told you this funny story. I try to visualize the Buddha. I try and try and try. And finally, I got an image that looks reasonably like a Buddha sitting there, and then it just stand up and walk away. No, then I gave up. I said, forget about it, Buddha. Never going to visualize you. Right? I'm done with you. Okay, and that is because I think I try too hard. That's a very common thing that people do. They try, they squeeze, you know, they tighten. They manage to work themselves into a headache visualizing because they use a lot of muscle power. I don't know why you use muscle. What has it got to do with your muscle, right? But we wanted to succeed. Yeah. So if you're like me, when we struggle with visualization, then an easy way to work with that is to piggyback your visualization on something easier. Like for me, tactile sensations are easier. I'm more aware of tactile sensations. They come forth more readily for me than visual images. Yeah, and so I tend to piggyback my visualization on some tactile thing. And for example, the breath. Right, so in the event that no images appear, but there's still the breath, right? There's still the sensation, right? So I don't have to panic. I don't have to feel that, oh, I don't know what to do. I try to visualize the Buddha, but no Buddha appear. only the hamburger appear. No. What am I going to do? Am I going to receive blessings from the hamburger? No. This is also true, okay? This is a true story. I was trying to visualize Kuan Yin, Avalokiteshvara, Buddha of Compassion, this figure behind. Quite complicated. Thousand arms, right? In a fasting retreat, I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was dehydrated, I was really feeling like sleeping. And so I sat there and visualized during the practice, and lo and behold, a hamburger appeared in the space of my mind. I said, wow, I really know how a hamburger looks like. I can't visualize the Buddha of Compassion, but the hamburger came spontaneously, effortlessly to mind that I can visualize, just not on demand, okay? Yeah. All right, so actually we all can visualize. So in this meditation, we're going to piggyback on the breath sensation, so that you don't have to feel very agitated, you know, to try to make something appear. And as we focus more on the in-breath, right? In-breath, just remember, each time we breathe in, we take in oxygen, life-giving oxygen. We need it to sustain our life. We need it to give us energy. You know? So it's something really positive. And along with it, we breathe in an image that has very positive connotation. So I suggest you breathe in golden yellow light. You know? How it appears to you, don't worry about it. You know? It can appear like, I don't know, just think of all the modern CGI images, whatever that comes to you. So breathe that golden yellow light or radiance in with each breath into your system. Now, on top of light, if you can manage, you can also breathe in a sense of warmth, right? Not heat, but warmth. Warmth that is a very positive feeling, like, you know, warmth that warm you up, you know, that maybe associate with love, of care. And if you can even manage further, a sense of bliss, something really blissful, pleasant, really nice. Yeah. So light, warmth, and bliss. Whatever you can manage, it's fine. And even if you cannot manage any of them, there's always your breath. Okay. And we're going to fill our body up with this radiance, with this warmth, with this bliss. Okay. So let's try to meditate on it. So first step, try to find a comfortable posture for your body, a meditation posture. I've not been very successful in Singapore, but I strongly recommend people to make use of the modern invention called the chair. Right? Especially if you sit on the floor and you found it very uncomfortable, please abandon your cross-legged posture and sit on a chair. Then all the pain and aches will disappear and you will have wonderful meditation, trust me. Right. So choose a posture, be it sitting on the floor or on a chair. If you're sitting on a chair, it's good to have both feet firmly planted on the ground to give your body a sense of a stable support. If you're sitting on the floor, have your leg crossed in whichever way. It's good to sit on a cushion to raise your pelvis up a little bit. Usually that is a more comfortable position for most people. Allow the back and spine to be upright in a natural way. Now, don't feel that you need to tighten your back muscle in any way to straighten your spine. Not necessary. Just allow the back and spine to assume an upright position. Almost like when you're standing. You know, you stand up, you don't feel that you need to tighten your back muscles. So you just assume that similar position for your upper body. Hands, you can rest your hands on your knees. Or you can place one hand on top of the other and rest them in your lap. So whichever way feels most comfortable and natural for you. Eyes, as I mentioned earlier, you can close them completely. That's the easiest way to do it. Some of you may want to try leaving them half open or even fully open. But if you open your eyes to whatever extent, it's good to just direct your gaze to the floor in front of you, some neutral surface, and then just forget about it. You know, don't try to tense up your eye muscles. Don't try to stare or anything. Just relax your eyes. So take a few moments, allow your body to adopt this meditation posture. really become aware that your posture, your body, is resting on something very solid, firm and stable beneath you. Sensations that you can experience at the points of contact between your body and the cushion, or the body and the chair, the body and the floor. Really feel that your body is resting on the earth, on the ground. And that your entire body in this posture is well supported with a sense of balance, with a sense of safety in this posture. So this is the first step of the meditation, acquiring a seat, a suitable seat for the body. In the second step, we're going to take some time to help the body and mind to settle down into meditation, see if we can put aside things that preoccupy our mind. We can help our body to release some unnecessary tension and tightness. So to do that, we bring our attention to the breath sensations in our body. So see if you can fully experience your in-breath and your out-breath. So breath sensations, which you may notice around your nostrils, your nose, you can feel the air flow in and out of your body. So you may also notice breath sensations at your chest, and there you probably notice it as a feeling of expansion and contraction of the chest. So as much as possible, just allow the breath to flow naturally. Don't feel that you have to make it to change your breath in any way. You know, the breath can be long or short, can be deep or shallow, can be slow or fast. So any of them is perfectly fine. Some of us may actually notice the breath sensations at the abdomen, a feeling or sensations of rising and falling synchronized with our breath. So see if you can, throughout the meditation, just come back to the breath sensations. Just return your attention gently so that once again you become aware of the breath flowing in and out, expanding, contracting, rising and falling. So coming back to the breath sensations, again and again, you'll find that our attention tends not to stay with the breath. Attention tends to wander off, we notice other things, and we find ourselves thinking about this or that. So all this mental activity is quite normal. You don't need to be upset about it, no need to be frustrated. Anytime you notice that you are no longer aware of the breath, then all you need to do is just come back to it. No, just return your attention, reconnect with the breath sensations in your body, and start again. So coming back to the breath, see if you can notice your out-breath first. Breathing out, there's always a sense of release that comes along with it. Breathing out, we release the carbon dioxide. So we can make use of this opportunity. Breathing out, you can give permission for your body to release some unnecessary tension or tightness. You also give permission for your mind to release or set aside some of the thoughts or memories or fantasies that are not related to the meditation. And a good place to begin this process of helping your body and mind to settle down is actually with your face. We so often do unconsciously tense up the muscles of our face. And if you do notice that, you notice that there are tensions in your forehead, or that you are tensing up the muscles around your eyes, or muscles in your jaw. See if you can, as you breathe out, gently release some of this tension in the face. See if you can allow in a feeling of softness, feeling of relaxation or comfort into your face. So see if you can allow this process of releasing, of loosening up and unwinding, this process of putting aside unnecessary tension, unnecessary thoughts, just think that it can continue in the background, on and on its own. So this is the second step, helping body and mind to transition into meditation. And then for the third step, the actual meditation, to deepen our meditation, we're going to introduce an element of visualization or imagination. And here, still with the breath, we focus or we pay attention to the in-breath. As you breathe in naturally, you take in oxygen to support the life, your life. Now imagine you also breathe in and let in something really bright and radiant. If you like, you can imagine it in golden yellow color. Just breathe in that golden yellow light. Imagine it flowing into your lungs, filling up your lungs. Coming back to the breath again and again. If you can manage it, you can even imagine breathe in a quality of warmth, a quality of bliss, if you can manage it. So that with each in-breath, you're taking oxygen, you're taking light, warmth, and bliss. Coming back to the breath, letting in, along with the breath, more of that radiance and other positive qualities. You can do it in your own way. Imagine it filling up your lungs, flowing into your heart, illuminating your chest. And just as we breathe in the oxygen that flows into our blood, and blood is pumped by our hearts to all parts of the body, likewise we're going to imagine the light and the warmth or bliss also flowing to all parts of the body. And we can start with the head, start with the brain actually. Imagine a portion of the light, the warmth or bliss flow upwards, touches your brain, flowing into all the nerve cells in the brain, so much so that every cell in the brain is somehow filled with light, golden yellow light, maybe with a quality of warmth, with a sense of bliss. Feel free to proceed with the visualization at your own pace, in your own way. You are most welcome to ignore me. Otherwise, I will imagine the light flows to all parts of my head, touching every cell in the head, and filling up even the spaces between the cells. Allow the golden light to touch my face, and somehow helps to relax the facial muscles, let in a feeling, a stronger feeling of softness, of ease and comfort into the face. Just imagine it, breath by breath, filling up all parts of the head. So feeling free to proceed at your own pace, in your own way. As you come back to the breath, as you breathe in, let in more of that light, the warmth and bliss. Now imagine that energy flows into your neck, touching your throat, so that this part of your body is also filled with light. Back to the breath again, letting in more of the light. Now imagine it flowing into the shoulders, both shoulders. Imagine it flowing into the muscles at the shoulders, the bones, the joints, the spaces between the tissues and the cells. So they bring something really positive to the experience of your shoulders. Maybe you feel with light, maybe there's a sense of warmth, a sense of pleasure, of relaxation, or maybe not, which is also perfectly fine. And allow the light to flow down both arms at the same time. Just imagine it in your own way, flowing from your shoulder joints, down your upper arms. Imagine it touching the muscles, the bones, the skin, moving towards the elbows, moving past the elbows into the forearms, into the hands, the palms, the fingers, all the way to the fingertips. And even if you do not see anything clearly, no visual image arise, just stay with the sensations of the arms. Just give your attention to your arms and tell yourself, now all parts of the arms are filled with light, with warmth, with bliss, with something really positive. Coming back to the breath, imagine the light flows in, filling up the chest, flowing down towards the abdomen,
touching all the vital organs in this part of your body, and not just the organs or the cells, but also all the different spaces, illuminating the spaces with light. And especially if you have some back problem or issue, also include your back in the visualization. Just imagine the light, the warmth or bliss penetrate also the muscles of your back, your upper back, your middle back, and your lower back. Let all the light or warmth or bliss gathered into your pelvis, your pelvic region, filling up this part with that positive energies. So much so that it's perfectly okay to rest the weight of your pelvis comfortably on your seat and surrender that to gravity. Coming back to the breath, as you breathe in more light, let it flow down both legs at the same time, starting from the hip joints, flowing down the thighs, filling up, touching the muscles, the bones, the joints, flowing into the knees, and then always move at your own pace, down towards the ankles, into the feet and toes. So come back to the breath again and again, and now that we have touch on all parts of the body, really see if you can imagine, or just tell yourself, your entire body is somehow filled with that light or warmth or bliss. And as you breathe in more of that light, see if you can reinforce this image that you have transformed your body into a body of light. Work with whatever that appears. Maybe you can see your body as filled with light, or you can imagine or sense it filled with warmth or with bliss. And even if none of that appear, stay with the sense of your entire body. Just tell yourself, your entire body is transformed as something really positive. Spend the next few moments reinforcing your visualization. Really feel that you are breathing in and out into a body of light. So much so that every cell in the body is definitely filled with light, or the spaces between cells and tissues and so on are completely illuminated also by the light. That even your entire skin is touched by the light. And sometimes I ask people, as they continue to focus on the body of light they have managed to visualize, imagined, you can also, to reinforce it, think a little bit of what this body of light stand for or mean to you. What would you like it to represent? Does the body of light represent a state of complete health? Especially if you have been struggling with illness, sickness, or state of complete safety, if you have been feeling a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry, maybe a state of power, of confidence, if you've been struggling with issue of self-esteem and confidence. So take a few moments, just reflect a little bit, what would you like or what you think this body of light stand for or mean to you? Then we conclude with a dedication. So one way to dedicate is to think that may anything positive that come out of this meditation, may that benefits stay with me, linger in the body and mind, to continue to benefit me long after the meditation is over. So that's what we covered last week, the body of light visualization. And some of this visualization you can find in this book, How to Meditate, by my teacher, Venerable Sangha Kadro or Catherine McDonough. Although what I present is like a modified version. Okay. So this body of light meditation is very helpful in learning to be receptive to what is more positive image, to be open to let in more positive, more uplifting kind of experiences or feelings. So there's some of the benefit that come from doing this visualization. Some people actually find visualization much more engaging. It's easier for them to absorb their attention in. They have less distraction. They find it more interesting. Then that would be this type of meditation would be for you. If you are like me, you already struggle with visualization and then sort of like a hassle and one more extra thing to struggle with, then you can just forget about it. Just do some other meditation. Yeah. Okay. Alright, so today I'm a bit ambitious. I think I'm going to the next touch on visualization practice that are more commonly people associate with Tibetan Buddhism or with Tantric Buddhism. This is especially this practice called Inner Fire Meditation or Tummo in Tibetan. Actually, it's not a direct translation, but it's sometimes people come to Tibetan Buddhism when they saw some, they may have read about it or they saw some documentary or things about. There is a practice of cultivating heat, or basically generating heat, although that's not the purpose, but the heat, body heat, you know, there's this real increase in your body temperature is a side effect of this meditation, hence it's called inner fire. And scientists love it because you can actually measure change in body temperature. You know? In fact, there was this story, not a very nice story, which is why sometimes people don't like to work with scientists, as they petitioned the Dalai Lama to send a
a serious meditator to go all the way from India, from Dharamsala to, I think it's Wisconsin University. Roger Davidson or something like that. Richard Davidson, that's right. Richard Davidson. And this started long time ago, long before when consciousness studies become reputable in neuroscience. And you really wanted this person, a meditator, to meditate so that you can measure change in body temperature. So this poor monk, he's a meditator, you know. Maybe he finished study, but he doesn't sound like not so much a scholar, but just someone really interested in meditating. He devoted his life to meditation, and because the Dalai Lama asked him, so he came out of his hermitage, and they put him on the plane. This may be the first time he was on the plane. Flew him all the way to US, and then went straight to the university, and they put him in a cold room, because they want a constant temperature. And they asked him, this is after you flew don't know how many hours, arrived there, and asked you, meditate. and measure the change of temperature. So they do a lot of this experiment for many days, right? A few days like that. So I think it's not exactly ideal experimental condition for this poor guy who is a little bit of culture shock also, and there's a language where he doesn't speak any English, you know? But nonetheless, because he's a meditator, I think they get some real repeatable results from this. Basically, he can meditate and he can change his body temperature at will. In fact, accomplished practitioner of inner fire meditation is like a dryer. Where you dry your wet bedsheet, you can wrap the bedsheet around this person, which they do in Tibet as a test of their... And they meditate and they dry the sheet. They literally dry it. So you start wet and become dry. And this is Tibetan. Tibetan had this kind of a little bit like gung-ho attitude. Then what they do is they take the dry bedsheet and soak it in water again and wrap it around this person. So how many sheets you can dry within a limited time is a test of your ability at inner fire meditation. So don't try it, okay? You might end up with a cold, okay? Right? So this meditator did that. I mean, not with drying bedsheet. It's too rough for modern science. Literally all those electrodes and all the measurements. I heard about this story because then after a few days of this torment of this poor guy, they decided to give him a break, day off, don't have to do anything serious. So, and they don't know what to do with him. He probably don't go shopping, no retail therapy. So they drove him to nearby, to Barre, Massachusetts, where there's this famous center, Insight Meditation Society, IMS, where they do Vipassana meditation. It's one of the biggest in the States. Yeah. And so he arrived there to talk to fellow Buddhists, not necessarily Tibetan Buddhists, and just have a chat with the teachers there, and he was telling them how wonderful this place, is so different from the cold room in the university. This place felt very nice, and because people there are seriously meditating, there's a kind of resonance among meditators. Yeah. So that's how I heard about this story, because one of the IMS teacher wrote about it in her book, Sharon Shelsford. Yeah. So that's the meditation I want to introduce. This is my... Sometimes my teacher, Lama Zubo Rinpoche, used this description, Mickey Mouse version. This is my cartoon version of that inner fire meditation. So I thought maybe it's good to introduce it, because some of you, those who come into contact with Tibetan Buddhism or Tibetan Buddhist meditation, might be interested in it. Why not? Since you heard about it, then maybe good to have some experience of it. And then sometimes I feel that, maybe this might be a safer way for you to experience it than try to pick up a book and try to do this practice. I have seen people do this practice, and it scares me how they do it, right? I thought, oh my God, I hope they don't kill themselves the way they do it, yeah. So I will describe to you, we'll do it, bit by bit, we just go along with it. And I want to start off with a practice also quite common, a visualization practice associated with breath. It's called a nine-round breathing meditation. Nine-round breathing meditation, which means you breathe nine times, okay? So very short meditation, only nine breaths. So I'll describe to you. I usually don't do this meditation because it involves remembering which nostrils you start out with. You breathe in from, it's called a form of alternate nostril breathing, but I can never remember whether it starts with the right nostrils or the left nostrils, and I couldn't be bothered to memorize it. So I describe it and then we do it. But I won't guide you because the rate of breathing is different from, right? So you don't want to breathe according to my rate of breathing. So I describe it and then we do a round, or two maybe, and then we carry on from there, right? And then I'm going to add on other elements to it. So we just play around with it and don't take it too serious. So now, what I'm going to present today, the 9-round breathing plus inner fire, I'm a bit weird. I don't teach people breath regulation or pranayama in Sanskrit. Pranayama means those things that ask you to breathe long, in-breath longer, out-breath shorter, or extend the break, hold your breath, do anything to regulate your breath. No, I don't, okay? Because I got into trouble when I tried to regulate my breath. So in this practice, your breath just flow naturally. It doesn't matter what I'm telling you to visualize. You don't have to control the breath. You just let the breath flow naturally. It can be long, can be short, can be deep, can be shallow. It does not matter. Okay? All we are changing is our attention. Not the breath, but our attention. So you breathe through both nostrils, yeah. But I will ask you, notice your right nostrils or notice your left nostrils. Okay? Right. It's good enough, trust me. And safer way to do it, Sometimes I tell people, oh my God, I think they're going to give themselves a heart attack the way they... Regulating the breath can be very effective if you know how to do it, but can also make it, can have some not so pleasant side effect if you don't do it properly. Right? And it's actually a lot harder than you think it is. So we'll do with natural breath. And what I'm going to invite you to do in the 9-round breathing, the first three rounds, is we imagine we breathe in normally, but we focus on the, when you go in, through the right nostrils, okay? And then you sort of go in, don't worry about what happened inside. You notice, the air is flowing in the from the right, and then it come out from the left. Right? Then right and left, then right and left, 3 times, okay? You count yourself. And then we switch. Now, focus on the left nostrils. So go in from the left. Just imagine that. It's like you go in from the left nostrils and come out the right, left, right, left, right. Where? And then you go in from both nostrils and come out from both nostrils. Sounds so profound, isn't it? Which is what normally we do. So that makes 3, 3, 3, 9 rounds. Understand? Okay? So we do 2, like 18 times, okay? And on time, on target, let's sit in a meditation posture. Just close your eyes and at your own way, in your own rate, don't follow me, right? Commence this 9-round meditation 2 times. So start from the right and then breathe out from the left at your own pace. And do not need to wait for me. The next one is from the left out from the right. And the last one will be through both nostrils. And you finish the first major round, start the second at your own pace. Okay, so if you get familiar with this 9-round breathing meditation, even though there's just 9 breaths, can be a very good way of helping to settle your mind, to take your attention off whatever it is that is preoccupying you, and help you to ease your way into meditation. Okay, so now that you start with a sort of a brief idea of what it involves, I'm going to elaborate it a little bit. Okay, so in Tantric Buddhism, a lot of the meditation that involve manipulating or working with what we call channel wind and drops. Okay, so I usually think of them as structures that we experience first person, but if you were to go and dissect your body, you wouldn't see anything. So these are structures that comes forth in our first person personal experience. Okay, experiences as if there are sensations or energies in your body and they seems to following certain fixed pathway, which we call channels, and the flow of energy in Sanskrit called prana or wind energy. And then there seems to be certain kind of substances that accumulate at certain parts of the body. These are called drops. And there are certain parts of your body that seems to have a greater significance, has stronger sensations, and these are called chakras. You must have heard of some of this, right? Okay, so in the 9-round breathing, we don't involve the chakra, but involve channels. So you imagine there are 3 channels, like this. The central channels, the left channel, and the right channel, the 3 of them. And they, it's not like Taoism, right? They reside at the very center of your body, okay? So for example, it starts at the crown. Sometimes they say 4 finger from your natural hairline. Yeah. Somewhere there is your crown chakra, the crown, underneath the skull. Yeah. So sometimes when you do this kind of meditation, if it's very hard for you to locate a particular spot, by all means, especially if you're on, just use your hand. You know, just place it there, and it helps you to locate points of sensations. No. Yeah. So the 3 channels, starts the 2 left and right, starts from the nostrils, goes underneath the skull to the crown, and then drop straight downwards. Okay. The central channel, funny enough, starts at the forehead, curve up and drop straight down from the crown. So the traditional image is the handle of an umbrella. I don't know how modern that image is. The handle, you turn the handle of the umbrella, this hook-like thing. So that's how the channel looks like. It sort of curve up and then goes straight down in the center of your body, goes all the way down. And today we are only going to focus up to the navel chakra. So somewhere at the navel area, but not exactly at the navel, but a little bit lower than that. You imagine these 3 tubes, like 3 straws like that, come down, and they fuse at the very bottom, a T-junction at the bottom, okay? Right. So they communicate at the very bottom, near just slightly below your navel area. So the 9-round breathing, technically, is like you breathe in through your right nostril, so the air flows from the right channel up all the way down and come out through the left channel and exit through your left nostril. Understand? Right? So you go like, okay, 3 times. Then breathe, come in from the left channel, come out through the right channel. Agree? Right? Now the very third time, come in through both left and right, go all the way down, and come up through the central channel, up the central, and since it's supposed to end here, so it's supposed, although you breathe out through your nose, that it exits through your forehead. Alright? More complicated now, right? But don't worry about, but agar-agar, roughly it's like this, right? So then you will find that, so we're going to repeat this, and you try to just imagine that there are such a thing called channels that kind of guide the flow of It's not actually air, but the flow of energy, wind energy, that goes. Okay, right? You will find that with this, you may have a tendency to lengthen your breath. You say, "Wow, so far down, must breathe a bit longer, otherwise cannot reach the bottom." This is a very human response. So if it happened, just go along with it. Okay, just don't feel like, cannot reach. Right. Don't take this kind of visualization too literally. Okay, just be relaxed and just do what you can. So we try again. Two rounds. I'm not going to guide you at all, but you try to do it as I explained. Right channel, up the left channel, first 3 times. Down the left channel, out the right channel, the second 3 times. And down both channel, and out through the central channel, the 3rd time. At your own pace, let's start. No need to close. Okay? At your own pace. And when you finish the first major round, do a second round. So, with the visualization, or at least the thought of the channels, together with the 9-round breathing, so that is the whole practice of 9-round breathing meditation. Yeah. And you may, if you're like me, you may find that sometimes after you do it, or while you're doing it, you feel that the breath doesn't flow as smoothly, yeah, because the tendency is, even you don't consciously do it, you try to regulate the breath. And that's one reason why I suggest people don't try too hard to regulate the breath, because it affects your physiological function. So as you become familiar with this practice, you will naturally become more relaxed about it. You won't be so tight. And then the whole practice will flow more in line with the rhythm of your natural breath. And you'll find that you get more and more comfortable with it. Because it's so simple, just 9 breaths, and sometimes it can have very profound effect on people. It's like it draws your attention to it so well that just 9 breaths, and then after that you find that you have managed to let go of all those things that preoccupy your mind before you start your meditation. And so some people like to do this 9-round breathing meditation at the beginning of their meditation practice as a way of helping them to settle into meditation. So if you find it easy, and you like it, then by all means, do it. All right? Up to this point, any question about this? Yes? Yeah, all the way up. All the way up, because that's where the channel is. Yeah. Yeah. Not enough time, isn't it? No. It takes a bit slow. But my breath is not long enough. That's why I don't do visualization. I always have this problem. Once my teacher asked me to visualize, fill the space with many, many Buddhas. Yeah. Then I said, teacher, I have a packing problem. How do I pack those Buddhas in the space? You know, do they like stack? Or do they like go one, you know, in the rows? Then he says, please don't think so concretely. This doesn't matter, just fill it up and that's it, okay? I said, oh. But it's a real issue, mathematical problem. Yeah. So anyway, when you do visualization, you find a way that makes sense to you and work for you, okay? Which can be very different from another person. Right. Any question? Okay. So we're going to add another element to it. And we're going to start to move into two more inner fire meditation. This is my version, right? My cartoon version, okay? You only need to add two things. First is a source of fire, right, at the navel area. So if you put your hand on your navel or just underneath your navel, right, and you try to put your attention inwards into the body, into the center of the body, you try to imagine that there is a place at that level, which is the location of your navel chakra. So even if you don't feel anything inside, you know, it's like the place where you have stomach ache, you know. So it's a sensation, a spot of sensation inside there. Maybe you can feel it, maybe not, but just imagine it. And that is the furnace, okay? That is the place we're going to put a source of fire. And with this kind of visualization, sometimes it's good to do it more literally. My teacher thought that, you know, have explained. What you can do is, it's a bit hard in the modern time now, because we hardly lit any fire, right? Especially charcoal fire. This is what we want. You know, you lit like barbecue, you charcoal, right? You heat the charcoal to red hot ember, right? You imagine you have an imaginary tongs. You pick up this piece of red hot ember and you insert it into your navel area and deposit it at your navel chakra. Voila, you have a source of heat, warmth and fire at the navel chakra, right? So it's like just above the T-junction and right in the central channel, right? Just above where the two left and right channel join and come up. So sit right there. So each time you breathe in through both nostrils, oh, it's like a bellow like that. No, the air or oxygen will flow from bottom up past this ember. Each time you breathe in, the flame, it sort of causes the ember to flame, to flare up with heat and fire. You know what I'm talking about, right? You still see the charcoal stove, the old version, where you fan, and that oxygen goes inside, and then right? You're not that young, right? Right? So then, as you fan, the ember bursts into flame, right? And heat is generated. So that is your furnace, and your navel chakra. Okay? Then we need a source of bliss. So the bliss, source of bliss, is at the crown chakra. Okay? And usually they say nectar, but no, I'm more literal. Something that will give you a sense of wow and sweetness and bliss, like chocolate. Right? Then you, but the color has to be white or yellow or silvery, some of that version, not dark chocolate, although I love dark chocolate. But not a very nice connotation to have dark chocolate. Like fondue, like that, flowing down, like that. Not so good. So, all right, white chocolate, okay? If you like chocolate, or a honeycomb full of honey, right, you put it there. They are in semi-solid state, okay? Right, so what I do is you're going to melt the source of bliss, and it's going to flow down your central channel. Slide down, you can say. Slide down your central channel. And as it moves downwards, generate bliss in your body. Are you with me? Right? So we're going to flame this fire. It sounds like a joke, right? Yeah. But the traditional one is more difficult. But that's why I said this is a cartoon version. You know, flame this fire, breath by breath, and just imagine the heat rises up the central channel. Right? You try to be, with visualization, you try to be as realistic as possible. You heat, and then all the impurities and all the water vapor along the channel all evaporate, disappear. The heat is rising up, towards the crown. Okay? When it reaches the crown, then the honey-like bliss starts to melt and starts to flow downwards, right? Flow down from the crown, slide down along the walls of the central channel until you arrive at the throat, at the chakra. Then it's sort of resting place. You start to rest there for a while. Gather more and more of that honey of bliss. And then after a while, it's kind of move on, flows down to your heart chakra. And again, it gathers there for a while. And then eventually, it begins its final journey towards the fire at your navel chakra. And every time it goes near the fire or it drips down, like dropping honey on hot charcoal. And it releases more bliss into your system. Right? Until your honey and fire meet and you have an explosion of bliss at your navel chakra. You probably don't feel any bliss, but you try your best to imagine it. Okay? And so this is a meditation where you mix fire, heat, with bliss. And the combination is an explosion of warmth, blissful feeling that spread from your navel all the way to the body. Right? So that's the difficulty with visualization. Maybe your actual experience don't correspond with the visualization, but let's do a meditation to give it a try. Okay? So I'll guide you through it. So, once again, settle your body in a comfortable, supportive meditation posture. Really allow your back to be upright in a natural way. Allow your spine to assume its natural curvature, one that allows it to feel most comfortable and most supported. Make sure that it is such that your chest feels open, not compressed, and you can breathe freely and easily. And take some time to establish the visualization of the three channels in your body. Channels are simply structures that correspond to our personal experience. Right and left channel, starting from the right and left nostrils, rising upwards towards the crown chakra, and then dropping straight down past your throat, past the heart chakra, past the navel chakra, and just slightly below your navel chakra. And your central channel starts from your forehead, curve upwards towards the crown chakra, drop downwards between the two left and right channel, and go all the way down. And imagine the three channels fused together at the very bottom, just below your navel chakra. Now, at your own pace, begin the 9-round breathing meditation. You can do it 1 round or 2, depending on how slow or fast you do it. At your own pace, let's do this 9-round breathing meditation, starting with the right nostrils and so on.
And whenever you finish with your 9-round breathing meditation, take some time to establish as clear as possible the sense of the 3 channels in your body. And on top of it, try to visualize and locate the 4 chakras. And you can use your hand to help you. Place your hand on the crown and try to imagine or at least sense the crown chakras just beneath your skull at the top of your head. And then you can move on further down to your throat, just inside your throat. Imagine right there is the throat chakra. You don't have to visualize anything, just feel or sense. There's a spot of stronger sensations at your throat, and just identify that as the throat chakra. Moving further down at your own pace, stop at the center of your chest. See if you can identify the heart chakra. And this is the place where sometimes we feel strong emotions. And moving further down, arrive at the navel chakra. And this could be at the navel or slightly below, a place where we sometimes feel strong sensations. So identify that as the navel chakra. It is at the navel chakra, within the central channel, just above the point of connection between the 3 channels, we're going to ignite a flame, the inner fire. And one way to make it vivid and easier for us to visualize is to imagine there is a source of fire. Fire from charcoal, burning wood. And you pick up a pair of imaginary tongs, reach into that fire, pick up a small piece of red hot ember, really hot, and place that ember inside your central channel at your navel chakra, just above the junction where the right, left, and central channel connect. So place that ember right there at your navel chakra, in your central channel, and try to imagine it there. And try to imagine feeling the heat radiating from that ember. Now that we have the ember, we must fill it with oxygen. So imagine, become aware of your breath, breathing in. Each time you breathe in, imagine the air travel down the right and left channels, all the way down to your navel, and flow upwards into the central channel, fanning the ember, allowing oxygen to flow over the red hot ember, allowing it to grow brighter, become warmer, and even flame starts to appear from it. So concentrate on this visualization for a while, becoming aware of the breath and imagining how your breath provides oxygen to fan the flame at your navel chakra. So this flame at your navel chakra is a focus of your concentration or practice as much as possible throughout the rest of the meditation. Try to keep a portion of your awareness on this flame. Almost as if the more you pay attention to the flame, the hotter it gets, that even your attention provides energy to this flame at your navel chakra. So coming back to the breath, continue to imagine as you breathe in, you are fanning the fire, the inner fire at your navel chakra. And imagine that flame getting hotter and hotter. And some of that heat starts to rise up the central channel, slowly at your own pace, bit by bit, rising higher and higher. So much so that even at your heart chakra, you start to feel a bit of the warmth as the flame is rising towards your heart chakra. Just think to yourself that the flame purified the central channel, burn away any impurities, remove any obstacles. And as the heart chakra become heated up, allow the flame, allow the heat to rise further upwards beyond your heart, moving towards your throat chakra. Slowly, at your own pace, even your throat chakra starts to sense the warmth, sense the heat, sense the temperature rising. And you allow the heat to rise past your throat chakra and moving upwards towards your crown chakra. And situated at your crown chakra, see if you can imagine or tell yourself it's a source of bliss. A source of great bliss that is represented in a form that is appropriate for you, meaningful to you. So I will imagine a piece of honeycomb full of solidified honey, a source of sweetness, a source of bliss. And as the heat rises up the central channel, arriving at the crown chakra, the honey starts to melt. In your own way, imagine this source of bliss. Liquid bliss starts to become liquefied, starts to melt, and starts to flow down the central channel, sliding down the wall of the central channel. And as it moves, bliss follows, moving downwards, moving away from the crown chakra, bit by bit, drop by drop, moving down towards your throat. Bliss and heat meeting, mixing. And allow that blissful feeling, the blissful substance, honey-like substance, to accumulate at your throat chakra. The more you accumulate, the greater the sense of bliss. And bliss is accumulating at your throat chakra. So coming back to the breath, breathing in, fanning the flame at your navel chakra. See if you can be mindful of the warmth, the heat at your navel chakra, and the accumulating sense of bliss at your throat chakra. The two of them are coming closer and closer together. And soon a portion of the honey, the blissful substance at your throat, starts to melt and flow further downwards towards your heart chakra. And as they move, bliss radiates, starts to fill up the rest of your body. as the blissful substance reaches your heart chakra, allow it to linger there a bit, accumulate at your heart chakra, so that now even at your heart, you start to have stronger sensations, maybe of bliss, at your heart chakra. And now when you feel ready, whenever, allow the blissful substance, the honey, to flow from the heart chakra downwards, moving closer and closer to your navel chakra, to the source of great heat and warmth, bliss and heat coming closer and closer together. If you like, you can even imagine now and then a drop of the blissful substance, a drop of the honey, may fall down the central channel and drops directly onto that red hot ember at your navel. And just briefly, suddenly, there's a burst of heat and bliss radiating from your navel outwards. And as the blissful substance moves closer and closer to the warmth, to the heat, more and more often you get this burst of blissful heat from your navel chakra. Feel ready, allow that whole mass of blissful substance to merge with the red hot ember, and just allow yourself to imagine an explosion of blissful heat radiating from your navel and extend to all parts of your body. So coming back to your natural breath, as you breathe in and out, see if you can allow the visualization of blissful heat to spread to all parts of your body and sustained throughout your whole body as you continue to breathe in and out of a body that is filled with heat, with bliss.
So not such an easy visualization practice to do, but I thought at least we should, you come to a visualization meditation course in the Tibetan Buddhist Center, you should at least have some idea what some of the type of meditation traditionally they do with visualization. And visualization, you utilizing chakras, channels, wind, quite, but usually they're classified as advanced practice. Yeah. And so you may notice, depending on your individual experiences, sometimes it's very hard to invoke the actual experience. You know, even though you try to imagine, it's hard to invoke. It's hard to invoke an experience of bliss. It's hard to invoke an actual experience of warmth or heat. So that is part of the challenge of this kind of meditation. Also, you also notice that it's very complicated, right? Involves a lot of things, which is typical of the traditional visualization practice. Yeah. But if you persevere with it, once you get more and more familiar with it, more and more you understand the sequence, understand what you're supposed to do, because there's so many things, it's very easy to get absorbed into doing it. So when it works for you, it's a very engaging type of meditation that you can fully absorb your attention into it. And sometimes for some people, the more complicated the visualization, the better, because then they really have to, you know, give attention to it. And they find that it's so much easier for them to forget about everything. They just drop everything. But of course, not everybody like it this way. Yeah. But so it works best for certain people. And next week, we'll continue. Next week will be the last session. We'll continue with this inner fire meditation. Yeah. Okay? Any last question? Yes? The what? Eight meditation. No. There is another meditation called the eight stages of dissolution. Yeah, but that is a different one, not this one. Yeah. But there's nothing eight about it, right? There are four chakras. Yeah, no. Yeah. So it's not. I think it's a different one. Yeah. This is called Tummo, inner fire, although it's the Mickey Mouse version of it. Yeah. Oh, okay, that's good. That's nice. Yes, yes. Oh, okay. Excellent. That's good. Yeah, so anyway, next week we'll give it another try. Yeah. Right. Thank you very much for your attention. Have a good weekend. And if you want to have the description, you can find it in this book. Right. It's available downstairs, free distribution. Okay. Yeah, it's tomorrow. It's called Inner Fire Meditation. It's a bit more elaborate than what I have present here. Yeah, so you, yeah, page 161, inner heat meditation, yeah.